We are on the air. All right. So a few shots I sent in, this became very controversial. We'll start with this, which is if you buy someone a present, let's say you buy them a metal bowl or a glass cup, and it needs to be toiveled, it needs tefillas kelim, can the person who bought it do the tefillah so that when you give the present, it will already be toiveled? So in Svara, it should be no problem. However, there are proofs from Shulchan Aruch that it is a problem, that it has to be a kli which is used for eating, not a kli which is bought for business, and not a kli which is bought for giving over as a present. And therefore, Hello Yosef, and therefore, if you buy someone a present and you want to do tefillah, Hello Yisrael, if you want to do tefillah's kelim for that person, it's a problem because by you, it's not for food. By you, it's for business. By you, it's for giving over as a present. And therefore, what's recommended is you buy it and you let them own it immediately, meaning you make a kinyan for them. And therefore, when you bought it, you had in mind that it's theirs. Not just it's yours that you're going to give as a present. You bought it and you made a kinyan. It's now theirs. You can't change your mind. They own it. Once they own it, you can go ahead and do tefillah in the mikvah for them. You can go ahead and put it in the mikvah for them. That's one option. Or another option is you buy it and then you eat off of it and give them a used present. Haha. Some people recommend that option. Or you just don't do tefillah at all and you give it to them and you let them do tefillah on that kli. Anyway, it is a big shaila, a big debate. But the idea is that only if it's there, only if it is owned by someone who plans on eating on it, can it now go ahead and be put into the mikvah? Okay, that was one shaila. Shaila number two, how often must you check your tefillin? So the mezuzahs need to be checked twice in every 7 years. Tefillin, the way it goes is, if it was bought by a, or made by a Yari Shemayim, a good source, and you know that when you bought it, they were good, you never need to check them ever again. Never. They don't need to be checked twice in 7 years. As long as they were bought by a good source, they don't need to be checked unless one or two things happen. Either it was left out in the heat, because then the heat could affect the tefillin, or it got wet. Either real water or straight out of the shower or out of the mikvah, you put them on. So then it may have that water could have seeped into the tefillin and ruined the parshios. So unless it was exposed to water or heat, there is no need for you to go ahead and check the tefillin. Now, there are people who check them anyway, which is okay, but no chiv to check the tefillin unless one of those two things have happened. Okay, and the third shaila sent in is, let's say you have miser money. You designated to give this miser money to tzedakah. And you end up needing that money. You need it for something. Something came up. You want to use that money. Are you allowed to use that money? So the answer is yes, because there's no kedusha that's on that money. It's not like it's a carbon that animal can only be brought to Beis HaMikdash, nothing else. This money is the value that you've set aside to give to miser. And therefore, what you can do is, let's say you put an envelope, $25 for miser. You can take that $25 and use it. And just write down, I owe Meiser $25. We have a bank account. In the bank account, you have in there $2,000 for Meiser. You can use that money and then just write on your ledger, I owe $2,000 to be given to Meiser. But you shouldn't, right. So there, because no kedusha is actually chal on that money. Okay, so those are three shilas sent in. Yeah, okay. Now let's move on to tonight's topic. So like this, dal and minim, right? So for the women here tonight, a lot of this will not be relevant unless you go do the shopping. However, it's good to know what's happening, what lulav and esrog you'll be holding. And for the men here that will be buying it, it's important to know. Now women, as we'll discuss, women are pater from the mitzvah, yet it's one of the mitzvahs that women do. Right? Women are pater from a lot of mitzvahs, seishas, mangramas, yet the Ashkenazi women for sure, when they do the mitzvah, they make the bracha. Sephardi women, even when they do the mitzvah, they don't make the bracha, but still they are connected. They do the mitzvah if they want to. So now here's a mitzvah of dal minim. So as the name would say, dal minim, there are four different minim. And what I want to discuss is first, one at a time, when you're buying it, when you have yours, what are you supposed to look for? And then general rules of how to take them and how to construct your bundle. Okay, so the first we'll discuss is a lulav. So a lulav, when you take the lulav, it has a spine. The spine is what we're going to be calling the shedra. So the shedra is what faces you. So when you hold the lulav, the shiny green backbone, that's the shedra. That's a part of the lulav that faces you. If you turn it around, you're going to see a lot of the brown indentations. We don't want that side. The other side is the shedra. That's what's facing you. That's green and shiny. So that shedra, when you buy it, you want to take a quick examination and make sure it does not have scoliosis. But make sure that this spine is not bent in different directions. What you want to see, you want to hold it out and you want to see that the spine is straight. If the spine is bent to the left, to the right, or down, it may be a problem. If it's bent a little bit back, that's okay. Okay, so thank you, Yudi. So what you want to do is have the spine being straight. Then the next important thing is you look at the spine and you follow the spine all the way up. You follow the spine all the way up. Hello, Team Siegel. Okay, so we're discussing now our four meaning. We're starting with lulav. So you have your spine, which is the shiny green part that's facing you. Now, you follow the spine all the way up. All the way up, it's going to be like a highway with a lot of exits. A lot of leaves will be exiting from the spine. Thank you. A lot of the branchless leaves will be exiting from the spine. And then as you follow it up, there'll be one leaf left that didn't exit, that the highway turned into this one little leaf, okay? That's what's called the middle leaf. That's what's called the tiyamis. The tiyamis is the most important part of the lulav. So you wanna locate the tiyamis on your lulav. So it's like the highway that ended up being a local road, but that same road, everything exited off of it, and then it's the one thing remaining. That's the tiyamis. You look at that tiyamis. You want that tiyamis to be perfect, and meaning you do not want it opened. Every leaf of a lulav is double leafed. There are two of them leaves as if stuck together with glue. Hashem made it that every lulav has a double leaf and they're stuck together. Now, if all of them open up, it's a problem. But most times the lulav will be closed and it's fine. But the middle leaf is what causes the most trouble, and in halacha is most relevant. So you want to follow that all the way up and look to see if it's completely closed. Sometimes you touch it and it won't even open. That means it's completely closed. Sometimes you look at it and you see already it's separating. That could be a problem. So here's the rule. The tiyamis lechatchila should be completely closed. Bidiyavet, if it's open up till tefach, which is around 8 centimeters, it's fine. Once it gets open a little bit more than a tefach, it could still be okay, but it's a real shaila and should be asked. So initially when buying it, you would not want to buy it if it's already open more than a tefach. If it's closed, that's what you want to get. If it's open a little bit, that's fine. Once it's open a little bit more, it's not ideal because it'll open more and more and more and could become puzzle. So that's the first you want to look at, the tiyamis, the middle leaf. You also want to make sure that it's not dried out. Now, how dried out is if it is white or if it starts to crumble to the touch. That's dried out. If it's not white or not crumbling, then it's not dried out, and that's fine. The other thing you want to make sure is that it's not snipped off at the top. Sometimes in cutting them off the tree or when they fall, the top could snip off. So you want to make sure that your tiyamis, your top middle leaf, was not snipped. And it could be very small, smallest snip off at the top, and that would make it puzzle. So those are when you're buying the lulav, right away, that's what you want to check for. The spine should be straight. The middle leaf should not be dried, split open, or snipped off. Now, all the other leaves also, but if one or two of the other leaves are like that, it's not a problem. It's only a problem if the majority of the leaves, the other leaves are open or dried or snipped off. But for the middle leaf is what is the most important one. The other thing is if it's opened a little bit, it looks like a fork. I mean, even if it's left less than a tefach open, but if it looks like that, there's airspace, and it looks like that, that also could be a problem. That's called a hymnic. That could be a problem. You do not want that the middle leaf, you look at it and you see airspace. That is a problem as well. Okay, now a lot of times you'll have an lulav, that the brown stuff, it's called kora. It's like, I don't know exactly what the material is made of. It's something like a leaf, but it could be right at the top. A lot of people don't like it, but lehalach, it's fine. If it's there, it's fine. You don't need to pull it off. Sometimes it helps keep everything closed, which according to some people is great. According to other people is not great. But lemaisa, you don't need to peel that stuff off. And if it's there, it's fine. The other thing is sometimes lulav will have like a hook. It's like bent over. It's called a knepel, I think that's what it's called. Some people hate them. Some people love them. If it's bent over like that, it'll keep it closed longer. Some people like it. Some people don't. The Hasidim, I believe, love it. And the Ashkenazim, the Litvaks, I believe, don't like it so much. But either way, everyone agrees, it does make a puzzle. That's just something to keep an eye out for. Okay, that's as far as the lulav goes. Moving on to the esrog. So the esrog, you want your esrog to be nice and yellow and clean. Now, if it's green, it's fine, as long as the green shows some signs that it could turn to yellow. It doesn't actually have to turn to yellow, but if it's completely green and staying green like a lime, that's a problem. As long as it's green with simanim of turning yellow, that's fine. Now, what you want to look at on the esrog, clean. Now, what does clean mean? It means that there are no white dots or brown or black dots. Brown dots are fine. White dots and black dots or pimples are now. Now, there's a difference between a pimple and bumps, right? When you have acne or when you have stuff going on your face, it doesn't really matter what it is. It doesn't look good. But on an esrog, it matters. If it's a bump, it's beautiful. But if it's a wart or a blister, it's not beautiful. So you have to pay attention to see, are they just regular bumps, which make it beautiful? Bumps are beautiful, but blisters or warts are not beautiful. And you can look at it and see the difference. If it's pus-filled, that's not beautiful. That's more like a blister. But you can look at it and see if it's a natural bump or if it's some sort of growth on top of it. Now, not every growth on top of it makes a puzzle. It should be asked, depending on the location. To give you an idea, the esrog has like that slant at the top. The top third around of an esrog is slanted, and then it gets the widest part and then the bottom part. Any part could have something which makes a puzzle, but the top third is what's most chamor. If there's one black dot or one white dot at the top third, it makes the whole thing puzzle. Or if there's a blister at the top third. Now on the bottom two thirds, a black dot here and there doesn't make a puzzle. And a little wart doesn't make a puzzle. It has to be a lot of them. Three of them has to look terrible. So what you really want to do, take a quick look at the esrog, see if there's any major black dots, white dots, or blisters anywhere. If there's a lot of them, get rid of it. If you look at it, you don't see anything, great. Now take a closer look at the top third. On the top third, you don't need a magnifying glass and you don't need to put it in front of your eyes for an hour, but you definitely want to get a good look. If you don't see a black dot, it's fine. Black dot, white dot, blister. If, however, you do see a black dot, white dot, or blister towards the top third, puzzle. You do not want it. But it goes based on your eyesight. Therefore, if you happen to have super eyesight and you see a little black dot, but your friend doesn't, don't point it out to him, because for him it's fine. Now, someone asked me the other year, what if someone's blind? So he won't see anything. Still, if it's seen by everyone, even if he doesn't see it, but everyone who sees it, it's a problem. But if it's so small that people who see, still not everybody sees it, so then it is only possible the one who sees it and not the one who doesn't see it. So when I show mine to a rabbi, they'll see something. They'll say, look at it again. And I look at it again. They say, do you see something? And I say, no, I don't see something. They'll say, it's fine. I say, well, did you see something? They say, yeah, he did. But he's not going to show me. Because as long as I don't see it, it's not there. And it's fine. Because what they did has to be pretty. Pretty beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, right? Not everyone likes everything. If you don't see that black dot, then it's fine. Now, another thing you keep an eye out for with this esrogim is you don't want there to be holes or peeled off skin. Now, brown dots are fine, but sometimes you get something brown, and the reason why it's brown is because some skin peeled off and it turned brown. So if the esrog is not peeled off and has brown spots, it's fine. But if it turned brown because of peeled off spots, that could be a problem. You want to smell it. If you're smelling some of the odor of the esrog, it's probably because it got peeled off. But the idea is you want to keep an eye out. Not every time that there's a hole or that there's a peel is a puzzle, but it definitely could make it puzzle. So when buying it initially, you want to make sure that there are no peeled off spots and no holes. The other thing is the pitum. Some people love it without the pitum. As long as it grew without the pitum, that's fine. Other people want the pitum. Now, if the pitum falls off, the rumor has it that it's puzzle. It's a rumor because it's not always true. There's the ball at the top, that's the pitum, and then the shoshana. Shoshanta, which is the stem on top. What really makes it possible is if the Shoshanta falls off. If the Pitim falls off itself, it's a debate, not necessarily as a puzzle. And it may not be possible from day number 3, 4, and 5 and on. So again, you don't want to knock it off, but if it got knocked off, don't throw it away immediately, ask a Shaila. But definitely when buying it in the initial purchase, you don't want to purchase it if the Pitim was knocked off. That's for sure. And that is a wrap on Esrog. Okay, moving on to Hadassim. Hadassim, those are the myrtles. Okay, so what you want to have over here is, ideally, when you're buying a Hadass, what you're looking for is that each level has 3 leaves coming out. What's called Meshulash. You want the Hadass to be Meshulash, 3 leaves coming out at the same level. So now some are very makbid to have 3 of them coming out exactly from the same stem. Same growth spot on the Hadass. Others say as long as they grew out at the same latitude, which means as long as the bottom of one is equal to the top of the other, that's called Meshulash. Sometimes they'll take a string and wrap the string. As long as that string will touch the top or bottom of those 3 leaves, that's called Meshulash. That's like 3 are coming out from the same spot. Okay, so you want your Hadass to be Meshulash. Ideally, you want Meshulash B'kulay all the way down. B'dieved, as long as Meshulash rove, the majority of the length of the Hadass is fine. So you start at the top and go down as long as majority, now what's majority of the shear? The shear is 3 tefachim, 24 to 30 centimeters is machlokas. So you would want ideally for 24 or 30 centimeters from the top to be fully Meshulash. B'dieved, as long as it is rove, 12 or 15 centimeters down would be Meshulash. That would be a kosher Hadass. If it is dried out, like crumbly to the touch or white, it's a problem. If the top is snipped off, that's also a problem. Okay, so you want to get hadassim that are not snipped, not white, not crumbling, and yes, 3 growing out of one latitude, one part. If it's becoming wilted, it's kosher. Browning, it's kosher. May not be pretty, but it's fine, it's kosher. If it's starting to droop down, like everything like drooping down, like as if it's like upside down, whatever, that may be a problem. But most hadassim, they stay very strong and fresh the whole time. And that is with the hadassim. Okay, arava. Here's what with the arava. Most aravas are all kosher. All you need on arava is that it is actually an arava. You want to make sure it's the right species. So as long as it has a good hexer on there, you can assume that it is arava. You want them to be majority of it having leaves. If the majority of the leaves fell off, it's a problem. As long as the majority of the leaves are there, it's fine, even though you see a lot of the stem. As long as the majority is having leaves, it's fine. If the top is snipped, it's puzzle. If it's dried out, it's puzzle. If it's wilted, turning brown or black, it's kosher. So by the rava, brown or black is fine. Wilted, it's fine. If it's white or crumbly to the touch, that's when it is a problem. Okay, that is a general look at the 4 species. Now, in general, what you need to have know is if it's stolen, it's no good. So if some guy opens up his trench coat and says, you want to buy a lulav, an eser hadass, do not buy it from him because stolen lulav and hadass, they're all puzzle. Borrowing is fine. You do not need to own it, except on the first day or in America, the first 2 days. Then you need to own it. So therefore, you have 2 ways. Either you buy your own, but let's say you don't want to buy your own, or you like your friends better than yours and you want to borrow from him. What you need to do is a matana amanas lahachzer. You borrow it, you take it as a present. He's giving it to you as a present. It's yours, conditionally that you will give it back to him. So in the first 2 days of Yontif, you have to own it, not enough to borrow it. And therefore, if you borrow your friend, you must speak out with him that he's giving it to you as a present on condition that you will give it back to him. Where this comes up a lot is with children. Any child under 13 or 12 for a girl has the ability to acquire it from you, but does not have the ability to give it back to you. And therefore, if you give it to a child as a present, it's no longer yours. It will never, ever be yours ever again. So therefore, if on the first day you give it to a child, here's a present, give it back to me, what you have just done is given him a present forever. It's now his and you'll never get it back. And therefore, when he gives it to you back, it's like you're borrowing it from him, which from the day 3, 4, and 5 is fine. But on day 1 and 2, it's not fine. And therefore, no one should give their eser to a kid as a present. You want to let him borrow it, that's fine. But as a present, You should not give it to a kid on day one or day two. Now, where it comes very tricky is husband and wife, father and son.
Bro, well, just real quick about the kid.
Yeah.
Stealing?
I don't hear
you. Can you?
Nah,
you hear me? It doesn't make sense so much, really, because that means you can never take anything away from your kids because technically they own everything and you would be stealing from them. If you give them a lollipop, you can't take it back without permission because it's Geneva. You own everything.
Yes. So you're 100% right. Now, it depends what your das was when you gave it to him. If your das is, here, kid, here's a lollipop, but it's my lollipop and I'm letting you eat my lollipop, that's fine. You can take it back whenever you want. But he's not going to be yotzei lulav and esrog with your lollipop. On the first 2 days, it has to be his. Whoever's it has to be theirs. So if you give it to them and they own it, it's now stuck by them. An adult has the ability to acquire and to give over, give back. An adult has that ability, a child doesn't. And therefore, you give him a lollipop and say, this is yours, it's his forever. You can't take it back, you're stealing. If you say, here, have a lollipop, but it's mine, no, you can take it back. So by lulav and esrog. So now, where it comes up very tricky, is, as I say, husband, wife, father, and son, what's recommended is within a family, you don't need to do this. Within a family, they can all use the same one because it's one ownership. It's family ownership. But you would not want to, a father should not give it to his 12-year-old son to own because then only he owns it and not the father. He could let his 12-year-old son use it and rely on the fact that it's family owned, that's okay. But to give to a stranger or anyone else on the first 2 days, you cannot do it. But from day three and on, you can borrow anyone's and it's fine. You can even borrow without asking because assume people do the mitzvahs. But so that's the rule on owning. So you have to be owned by you on day one and two, borrow on from day three and on is fine. Now, as far as the measurements, so the lulav, and listen, this is very tricky, the lulav spine must be 4 tefachim, the spine. We don't mean from bottom to top, the spine. You measure the spine from the bottom till the tiyamis, meaning once when all the branches are breaking off, that's still the spine. But once all the branches have broken off and all that's left is now the middle one turning into a leaf, the spine has ended there. You need 4 tefachim from bottom to the top of the spine. That's the 4 tefachim of a lulav. The hadas and their rubbers have to be 3 tefachim, which is 24 to 30 centimeters. So the lulav spine should be around 32 plus centimeters. And the hadas and their rubbers should be at least 24 to 30 centimeters. Now, when you're putting them together, they put 3 hadasim, 2 aravas. The hadasim should be on the right. So now the spine is facing you. The green shiny part is facing you. You want the hadasim on the right and the aravas on the left. The way I remember that is AL, American League. So you want the aravas on the left, hadasim on the right. You want the hadasim to be a little bit higher than the aravas. So again, as you're putting them in the bundle, 3 hadasim a little bit higher than the aravas, hadasim on the right. Last thing, which people mess up a lot, is you want there to be a tefach of open space on the spine above the hadasim. So you want that top tefach of your lulav to be seen in clear, empty air, no fly zone, no hadasim or ravas entering the top tefach of the spine, not the top of the leaf, but the top tefach of the spine, because that's prettier. When you see the exposed spine of the lulav and the das and rabbis under it, it has a prettier look to it. So that's what you want when you put your bundle together. Now, one more thing, when you put your bundle together, it has to be tied together with a knot, a keshesh al kayama, which you do before yantif. So if you got by those clutchicles, whatever the holes of the das and rabbis, you want to tie that on before yantif with a real knot. And then on yantif, you can slide in the hadasim and the rabbis. But you want to have a knot, a real knot that's tying everything together. Also, for hiddur mitzvah, it's not ma'akev, but for hiddur mitzvah, you want to have 3 knots on the actual spine. So on the not on top tefach, nothing on top tefach, but from the top tefach down, you want to have 3 knots tied onto your lulav. Okay, so that's where you go. Right before you make it, Erev Yontif, take some lulav, take a lulav branch, open it up, tie 3 knots around your lulav, 1, 2, 3, on the bottom part of the spine, not the top tefach. Then take your klechko, which holds the lulav, tie a knot around that, tie it on, And then on Yantif, you'll slide in their dasim and their ravas inside that clutchicle. Now, you are allowed to take them in and out on Yantif and put them back into water. If you want to keep them in water, you're allowed to return them to the water. You're not allowed to refresh and put new water in, but you can return them to the water. Or if you keep it in, let's say, like a wet paper towel, you shouldn't add water to that on Yantif, but you can wash your hands over a paper towel and that gets a little bit wet. That is fine. Now, so that is as far as the storage goes. Now, and when you take it, if you are a righty, which most people are, that the lulav bundle should be in your right hand and the esrog in your left hand. If you are a lefty, you switch it around. The lulav bundle in your left hand and the esrog in your right hand. Therefore, if you see someone in shul who has it differently than you, you can assume that he's a lefty or a righty. But again, that's the rule. The righties, the bundle in the right hand, the lefties have the bundle in the left hand. You make your bracha and then you wave it, you shake it, you do nanuim. There's a machlekes, how to do the nanuim. Machlekes, which direction comes first. At the end of the day, it's all good, but you want to cover all six directions. There's different minhagim between Ashkenazi and Sephardi and Hasidish and whatever it is. Whatever you did last year, if you're still alive this year, it's fine and do it. And follow whatever your family minhag is. And also how you shake. Do you shake as you're moving or you get to the spot and then shake? Different shitas. Again, they're all good. Just different minhagim of how to shake and which direction to shake. But you want to cover all six directions and shake three times six directions. Some people take it in the sukkah. Al pi Kabbalah, it's spooky, holy to do it in the sukkah. But you do not need to do it in the sukkah. You can do it anywhere you want. And you're still yosef the mitzvah. Some people do it in shul. You can do it in your house. It doesn't matter. Now, important, when you take it and pick it up, you have really fulfilled the mitzvah immediately. And therefore, maybe it's not great because now you're making the bracha after you've already picked it up, after you've already done your mitzvah. We want all the brachas to be over lasiyasan. We want to make the bracha before you do the mitzvah, not after you've done the mitzvah. And therefore, that's what the custom is. You pick up the esrog upside down with the ukitz up top, the pitum on the bottom, the ukitz up top, that's upside down. You're not yotze the mitzvah like that. And therefore, you pick it up like that. You're not yotze the mitzvah yet. Now you make your bracha. And then you flip over the esrog to have the pitum up top and the ukitz, the stem on the bottom. Now you're yotzei mitzvah, and that's perfect. So you made your bracha, now you flip it over, now you're yotzei mitzvah. You've done good. One more thing is rubbing them together. So it's not a good idea to rub them together or to hold them together because they could rip the skin of the esrog. So you want to keep a little airspace between them just so that it doesn't rip off the skin of the esrog. When you shake, you need to shake them all. Even the esrog has to be shaken. So you don't want to hold it like this and just shake the lulav and not the esrog. All four have to be shaken. Just recommended not to have them rubbing at each other. And one last thing is, it's spooky, but not to hold them all in the same hand. It gets very tricky. Sometimes you want to hold the sitter in one hand and your lulav and the esrog in the other hand. It's not a good idea. A pikabala, you don't want to hold them in the same hand. Bad things could happen to the world. So maybe that's what happened this year. But you don't want to hold them together. You want to have clearly in different hands. And the sitter, you could rest on your arms or hold it in the hand with the esrog. Whatever you want to do, figure it out. But not a good idea to hold the lulav and the esrog in the same hand. Again, you're still yotzei and mitzvah, which is not a good idea. The early
Wait, even if you're like, even during challah, let's say like you're waiting for things to go and right. You have
a
sitter.
Even what I recommend is get a small sitter that you could hold the esrog and the sitter in your hand, like a little paperback. I have one that's like three pages. Just make a photocopy of three little pages. You could hold it in between your pinky and your finger. You don't want to hold them together. Again, the world will not end if you do. You're still yotzei and you're mitzvah if you do. And if you have to do for a second in order to hold, that's fine. But ideally, when you're doing your mitzvahs, when you're doing them, they should be held separately.
Wow, I see everyone holding it in one hand.
No, you didn't come see me. I don't. And where I come from, a lot of people don't do it. They hold the sitter like this. Like they bump into people. You don't want to do that either. But again, you don't want to hold it in the same hand, ideally.
Now, I mean, Hoshanas, it's impossible.
Listen, I have a tiny, tiny little thing with Hoshanas. I can hold my pinky, and I do. So I hold the esrog here with my little Hoshana. I can see it and read it. It's doable. If you have a hard time, what?
How do you switch the page?
Good question. I put my lulav down, switch the page, and pick it back up. Aha.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, yeah, it's not Gehenim. No one's going to go to Gehenim for doing this. but it's something to keep aware, be aware of, not to hold them both in the same ones, right? So Yuri's telling me, which is true, you have some of them you could hold on your arm, but there are a lot of different, you can use your imagination that you should be able to follow along. Now, if you daven by yourself at home, you still say Hoshanas, but you do not rotate around your dining room table. You just stand still and say Hoshanas. If you're in shul, you go around the Sefer Torah. The earliest time to shake the lulav is dawn, but the ideal time is sunrise, Netzachama, and on. You should not eat before you shake the lulav, and that is a wrap. Okay, that's a wrap on Hilchos Daled Minim. All right, we'll end off with some ideas in the Hashkafa. So we're finishing out Shar Perek Daled of Shar Bitachon. We've been discussing how to get Oyel Hava. The Torah doesn't discuss it. What the Chavis HaVava says is we need chesed from Hashem to get Oyel Hava. He recommends, what do you want to do to let Hashem give you Oyel Hava? He says you have to try and minimize your love for Oyel Hazeh and fill that love with love for Hashem. I'll give an example. Someone just told me he went to a football game and his team won. And he was so excited and he was high-fiving everyone and hugging everyone. And it was like such excitement. When he came home, he told that to his wife. Oh, that's wonderful. And you were there with our son? Yeah. And he said, yeah, we were high-fiving and hugging. He said, now you're going to be in shul in a week and Simchas Torah. Are you going to be as excited with Dancing with the Torah as you were when you were high-fiving everyone about the fact that the football team won? And he was like, ah. Meaning he had such tremendous love for this football team, but did he have that for the Sefer Torah, for Simchas Torah? The idea is that you can be a fan and love everything, but to try and realize the love that we should have is more for holy things than Hashem, than for this world. And if it's to try to decrease a little bit of love for the things in this world and fill that void, you need to love something. So fill the void of love for Olam Hazeh with the love for Hashem. And that is the trick that Chavis HaVava says, which will help you get Olam Haba. In davening, I want to focus a little bit on Vidui. We're going to say Vidui in Yom Kippur on Yom Kippur itself at least 10 times. And in Slichas, we're saying it. Just an idea in Vidui, we say Avol Anachnu V'Avoseinu Chatanu, which that's like called the Iker Vidui. What are we saying? That we have sinned and our fathers have sinned. Why are we mentioning our fathers? What's anybody's business what my father did? What's that do with me? I should say, Avol Anachnu Chatanu. I sinned. But why are we saying I sinned and my father sinned? What's it relevant? So it's brought down that a person does not get punished for his father's sin. You're your own man. Just because your father did avaras, that doesn't mean you're going to get punished. However, if you follow in his footsteps, if you do those same avaras, then you will get punished because you're following his line. You're saying, all right, I'm like my father and I'm taking his avaras too. And therefore what you want to do is you're doing vidui. In case you are doing the same avaras that your father has done, you may get punished. And therefore you're confessing, I sin and my father sin. I'm doing the same sins as him. Chatanu, we have sinned and we want forgiveness for that. Others say that avoseinu is not referring to father, but it's referring to your previous Gilgal Neshama. That the Gilgal Neshama, that you're reincarnated, you're coming back, whatever, your Neshama is back into you from someone else, is called your Avos. And then I was saying to someone learned means is going on your Gilgal. So you're doing tshuva, which is why you're here. You're here to fix up your previous Neshama. You're doing tshuva for whatever you have done and whatever your Gilgal Neshama has done. Okay, spooky stuff. But the idea is, the ikr is to be able to say, I have sinned, to mean it. I have sinned, chatanu, I have sinned, we have sinned. And that is the vidui, the confession that must be done. This week's parasha is Vayelech. Two short ideas. One of them is the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. Even if you own it, even if you inherited it from your father, you still have your own mitzvah to write it. Because when it comes to Torah, you can't just rely on the fact that, oh, my father learned, my father knows. It's got to be your own relationship, your own learning. And therefore, you have to write your own Sefer Torah. And one last idea on the parsha, it says Nitzavim was last week's parsha, Vayelech is this week's. Nitzavim is plural. We will stand. Vayelech is singular. I will go, and he will go. The idea is sometimes when you're with a group, it's good to stand together with the group. But sometimes you have to leave that group. If it's not a good group for you, you have to go and be that individual and go. You can't be afraid to be Vayelech, the individual who's going to leave the group. Now, we all want to be part of Klal Yisrael. We don't want to separate from Klal Yisrael. But sometimes within little pockets, within little groups, that's not the group that you should be in. So Nitzavim, we stand together. Sometimes that's right. And sometimes Vayelech, the individual, must step out of that group if it's better for him. Even if it's hard to separate, but he may have to do that. And we'll end off with the bar for Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur, people view this as this is a scary day. This is a sad day. So it's definitely not a sad day. It's a serious day. I don't know if it's scary, perhaps scary. Definitely not sad. The first thing we do in Yom Kippur is we say Shechianu. Shechianu is a bracha, which we only make on happy mitzvahs. Shechianu, we're so excited that we're here. That is why we're excited that we're here. Because Yom Kippur is a day of opportunity. It's a day that we are so dirty when we come in, and we are cleansed when we come out. You have to believe in the cleansing process, the kapara of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is machaper, it forgives you as long as you believe in it, and as long as you have done vidui, as long as you have confessed to your avirus, and you believe that Yom Kippur is machaper, it is machaper. So it's a day of seriousness that's not sad at all. And therefore we go in the Shechianu, we're so happy, we're so lucky that we have this opportunity to get cleansed. And one more thing is we fast the whole day. It's very hard. But realize that it's an opportunity. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa every second. No other day do we have that. Fasting is a mitzvah d'oraisa. You have it every second, the whole Yom Kippur from the first second, even though you're full, you just ate. The mitzvah d'oraisa starts, it's here, I'm fasting. What other day do you have it? A mitzvah d'oraisa every second. So when you look at your watch, you say, oh my gosh, another 7 hours. It should be the other way around. It should be, yes, I have at least another 7 hours of a mitzvah d'oraisa every second. And when there's 1 hour left, then it should be, oh, only 1 hour left. There should be never only 1 hour left because it's an opportunity we don't have the rest of the year. On the day that we're getting cleansed, to be able to do a mitzvah d'oraisa every second, it's an unbelievable opportunity. We should all be zeicha to the kapara of Yom Kippur. I'm going to send the next year will be after Sukkot. So we're taking a break for a week or two. I'll send out an email. Everyone should have a great Shabbos, great Yom Tov, and we'll be in touch. Bye-bye.
Amen. Thank you.